We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast is sponsored by Liquid Death. Are you thirsty? Parched? Do you like dark and eerie, sinister names for your beverages? Then you'll love Liquid Death. Go to liquiddeath.com. Use the promo code BIGBLUE.
Blue Wire.
Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier. Joined as well by my co-host Nick Pilato. This time to my right, we're doing a podcast from the same location. I visited him down in Arizona. Had a great weekend. It wasn't capped off with, like, I guess my favorite moment. I really hope the Giants had a little bit of a better win here. Instead, it was a tie. First tie since 1997 for the New York Giants. And that was against the Washington football team as well. I just keep calling them a football team.
In week 13.
In week 13, because that's the weird type of crap that's going on here. But, you know, it was a good weekend. We got to do some fun things. And then we capped it off with this Giants game, Nick. So how are you feeling after today's tie? Let's start there.
Disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan. I think the first adjective that comes to my mind is just, I'm disappointed. And I know this is a tie, but the Giants had so many different opportunities to win this football game. Throughout the second half, there were things that they did in the first half that they could have cleaned up. But those things happen every now and again throughout a game, right? But when you really focus in on the fourth quarter and you really focus in on the offense, now the offense just went three and out, three and out, three and out, four and out, dumb taunting penalty, put the defense back out there. And the only offense they could really muster in the second half was a touchdown scored because Azeez Ojulari sacked and stripped Taylor Heinicke. It was just a really, really disappointing game against a team that I feel like the New York Giants could beat. And now this team is still in the playoff hunt, and they are the fourth most dangerous, or third, I should say, most dangerous team not named the Giants in this division, because you have Dallas and you have the Eagles, and right, you get to play them in 2 weeks. They get a bye week next week, so 3 weeks to prepare for the New York Giants, which I'm frustrated about, but I'm pretty disappointed, and I actually view this somewhat more as a loss than a tie.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to. I came into this game expecting the Giants to win this game. We both predicted they would win in our preview podcast. And ultimately, part of that reason was they were coming off a mini bye with the fact that the last time they played was Thanksgiving against the Cowboys. Two, they got a lot healthier. We knew Daniel Bellinger was coming back from this game. He played almost, we'll have to see the snap counts, but it felt like he was out there for most of the snaps. I don't think there's any kind of limitations there. I was really excited about Ojulari's return. He was a full participant at practice. Didn't play a full complement of snaps, but played a lot and made a massive impact. And they got Evan Neal back. There really weren't any injuries outside of the ones that are like the long-term ones, the Adoree, the McKinney, which play a big role. There's no doubt about it. But this was a healthy team, so I really thought they would win this game pretty easily. And at one point, it did feel like they were going to. In the second half, they took control early. They had the sack forced fumble by Ojulari, a game-changing play, set him up in a short field, and for once, they actually converted a touchdown in these short fields off the turnovers. It was an incredible route by Isaiah Hodgins. I want to talk about a little bit later, because I think he's a really good player right now, a really good role player right now, I should say, someone who they did a good job of scooping off waivers from the Bills, or off the practice squad from the Bills, and he also made a big play earlier when he converted that third down on an underneath throw that was about 3 yards short of the sticks, and he fought for those extra 3 yards. But that route was a great route, and the throw was on time, and it was a touchdown. So he converted that. And like you said, after that, Washington football team didn't actually do much in the way of scoring. They held the ball. They had some long drives before their touchdown drive tied the game, but they didn't score. But what happened? Exactly what you said. It was a three-play, 9-yard drive by the Giants on their first real possession in the second half at non-turnover possession. Then a three-play drive for minus 5 yards, a four-play drive for minus 2 yards, and a three-play drive for 0 yards right after Washington scored the touchdown right before overtime. And that was the one with the two bombs. And so ultimately, it feels like they just wasted opportunity here on the offensive side of the ball. And I know a lot of people are blaming the defense in this game. I don't really have blame for the defense after watching a game like this. How can you blame a defense that helped you get the touchdown in the second half? I understand there's bad tackling all around. And there was like, at the end of the game, look, they ran the ball pretty well against the Giants, the football team. But running the ball doesn't win you football games. They didn't really generate much of a pass offense at all, the Washington football team, in the second half. Usually you win a football game like that. But the Giants found a way to tie this one, and it's just a little disappointing, especially 8-play, 90-yard drive. I'm looking at it now by the Washington football team. Yes, it was an amazing play by Taylor Heinicke, that 4th-and-4. I mean, look, the Giants had him dead to rights. He had to improvise, and he made a really good throw on the run to his left, off platform, kind of just like ripping that thing back to Samuel. But ultimately, it just felt like this was a game they kind of just gave up.
That 8-play, 90-yard drive, though, came after an 11-play, 38-yard drive where the Giants forced in the punt, and then a 12-play, 40-yard drive where Joey Sly missed a field goal because Dexter Lawrence split a double team and sacked Taylor Heinicke, knocking him out of field goal range. And then what did the Giants' offense do to repay the defense for that favor? They go 3-and-out, the minus 5 yards like you brought up, and then what does the defense do? Bringing out the Washington team. So the defense of this Giants team, we look at it and we see the injuries on the back end and we know that there's an issue. We know they're not the most talented group, yet they kept the Giants in this game. They're not going up against the Chiefs. They're going up against Washington. And Washington has a similar type of offense to the Giants, i.e. they're just like gritty. They're going to run the football. They're going to work the play action pass. They have some, I would say, a lot more talent on their offense with Curtis Samuel, Terry McLaurin, and Jahan Dotson. But the defense really did everything they could to give the football to the Giants, and the Giants offense just absolutely fumbled it, man. They just dropped it in this game.
Yeah, look, it's hard to blame a defense when they're on the field the entire game. After the Giants scored the Hodgins touchdown in the second half, Washington had the ball for 11 plays, 38 yards it only went, but it ripped off 8 minutes of clock. The Giants then held the ball on offense for just 2 minutes. And remember, their touchdown drive only lasted 2.5 minutes because it was a quick 5-play, 20 yards to Hodgins. They only held the ball for 2 minutes, and it was 6 more minutes on defense for the Giants with Washington. And that was another 0 point. Despite that, was 23 plays for Washington on 2 straight drives, and all they got out of it was 0 points, but they wasted 14 minutes of clock. That's almost the entire second half. It's half the second half. And then what did they do right after that? Giants defense went right back on the field and forced a 3-and-out. And even after the Giants giving up, you know, another 3-and-out of their own on offense, it only went 2 minutes. So it just felt like the offense let the Giants down in this game to me completely and entirely. They were 4 of 13 on third downs versus Washington on offense. It was just 3 of 14 on third downs. Third down defense dominant for both sides of the ball. The turnovers, I believe, is what tied. Daniel Jones had the fumble early that led to 3 points by Washington. Washington had the turnover that led to 7 points by the Giants. And so it felt like a very even game outside the fact that Giants offense just couldn't get it going in the second half. Now, the question comes, who is to blame for that? And that's obviously something we need to film for. But did you feel like the Giants got a little too conservative? I've been hearing that a lot on Twitter in the post game.
Well, I mean, I would say maybe in some spots, Dan, but they did take 3 deep shots on one drive, and that resulted in 3-and-out with 0 yards because all 3 of those deep shots went incomplete, and it also ended up being a 28-second drive.
Right.
Now, I like the fact that they took that deep shot to Darius Slayton. I reserve my judgment on who's to quote-unquote fault there because I want to see the all-22. I want to see what the route was. It looked like Darius Slayton might have jumped a little early. It looked like the ball could have been inside, but we'll wait to see the all-22 the all-22 to make my judgment with that specific play. And then they take another shot up the sideline to Darius Slayton, one-on-one matchup, trust your guy. It's something that's worked in the past. And Brian Daboll was really upset that there could have been a PI there. Look, I didn't think there was an egregious contact there, so I'm fine with it not getting called. And then the third down play ends up going incomplete as well. I think the Giants are doing what they can on offense right now. And it's the same formula they've been using throughout the winning streak that they had. In order for them to get the wins that they had, they got because they were winning football games in that manner. Now it's like, well, why don't you make adjustments? I agree with that. I think there are some times where they could make adjustments and try to develop a different type of approach in terms of passing the football. But we also see several times in this game, 2nd-and-7, you know, after a 3-yard run, setting up nicely. Giants try to pass the football. What? Sack.
Right.
Mark Lewinsky, inside, sack. Mark Lewinsky, around his right, outside, sack. Like, those are issues, man. Like, the protection up front, in terms of pass protection, continues to be a problem. And I brought this up last week and I was like, let's wait and see. But dude, if Josh Azudu and Bredesen are back, like, I think you really have to have a serious conversation to bench Mark Lewinsky because he's been horrendous in pass protection.
Yeah, it's a conversation that we're going to have on this podcast. It's a conversation I hope the coaching staff has, despite Glowinski's salary. And I think they will, because look, they already proved earlier to us this season that Golladay, who makes a big contract, can be benched. That's true. He can be benched despite being healthy. And as far as that goes, one thing that stood out to me regarding what you just said, which I thought was really telling, was I can't remember too many times, like I saw it today, and I couldn't remember too many other times on the film over the last however many games that I saw a true Daniel Jones under center drop back, not a play action, just he's under center and he drops all the way back. And he did that today, and it was an immediate sack. The only time I really saw them try that, and I'm thinking back to the film, like how many times have he even just tried a true drop back without the play action from under center? And you just don't see that a lot. You see him throw out a shotgun sometimes without the play action, but most times when he's under center and they've passed the ball, it's been a play action pass. Today they tried it, and what happened? Immediately Golinski gets beat and they give up a sack. And if you're Kafka and you're Dable and you're seeing that, you're like, well, how can I do this? Because I'm worried about doing this. The reason I don't call these plays are because I think that could happen. And then it happens right away. And you're like, now I blow a whole drive up. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk about why the Giants don't have a drop back pass game this year. It's really getting to levels of it's not Garrett level bad because the concepts aren't bad. Like the route concepts are fine, but it's Garrett level bad in the sense that we don't have a drop back pass game. We're not even trying one. We don't throw anything. And, you know, like you said, we took a couple deep shots down the field. That's all right. But the intermediate game is like non-existent anymore. And part of that, I think the biggest part of that for me is not the quarterback or the coaching. It's the offensive line, unfortunately.
Well, what was one of the biggest talking points when the Giants was winning football games? And people did not like when we brought this up, or when people brought this up in general, because it's viewed as negative, but it was how sustainable is this winning approach? That was the big question. And people were like, hey, they're winning. That's all that matters. It's like, yeah, but how sustainable is it for them to be winning football games in a manner where all you're doing is rolling Daniel Jones out? Like teams are going to start catching on to that. Right. And we're the first team that really caught on to it was Seattle right before the bye week. Bruce Irvin, it's like, dude, don't even play Saquon Barkley. Run directly at Daniel Jones on the bootleg. And every team has followed that recipe. Even Houston followed that. And the Giants won that game. And now we're seeing how the Giants are struggling to mount a respectable offense right now, because they're stopping Daniel Jones and they're shutting down the run. And they're saying, beat us with a traditional passing attack. And the Giants just have not been able to do that. It's not all one person's fault. It's not all Kafka's fault. It's not all Daniel Jones's fault. It's not all Saquon Barkley's fault. It's not all the offensive line. It's a collective issue right now that this team needs to figure out if they want to make a playoff push and do anything in the playoffs, if they are even fortunate enough to get in at this point.
Yeah, and that's going to be determined right now. The Giants have an interesting schedule that's kind of developed, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, so I don't want to jump the gun. I want to get back to something you said a few minutes ago about Mark Glowinski.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's like, it's interesting because we see the rep in the red zone, right, where Saquon Barkley has his touchdown run, and you're like, damn, that's a freaking good rep by Mark Glowinski. Like the whole right side of the line there, Neil Glowinski, they did a great job blocking on the play side. And you're like, okay, this is what they saw. This is why they signed Glowinski. They saw him do this for Jonathan Taylor. But then you see him just blow up two drives early in pass pro. And you're like, I don't know if the negative outweighs the positive with him right now in my mind, because pass pro is so much more important than the run game, to be quite frank. Like run game's great. Like it worked in the red zone that play, but it's harder to have a consistent run game. There's other ways to take away a run game, but a pass game that doesn't have somebody like Glowinski just getting beat that quick in pass protection, you can't run a pass game with that. Like you don't even have an option. So at that point you think, okay, if Bredesen's healthy, can you start training him? Because that's the other issue. You have Zudu and Bredesen, but they've really only played left guard this year. So I don't know if you can just be like, all right, slot him right in. You saw today with Nick Gates at left guard, this wasn't the best version of Nick Gates. We'll see on the film to know for sure.
Yeah,
but I think it was pretty obvious this wasn't anywhere near the film we put out last week at center.
I've said this several times in several different podcasts. Love Nick Gates. Big Nick Gates fan. He always struggles against Daron Payne and Jonathan.
It's a tough matchup.
It's a very, very tough matchup. And I think Nick Gates being like 6'5", one of his issues is when you allow somebody with the center of gravity and the strength and the point of attack ability of a Daron Payne into your chest, it's very hard for Nick Gates to like anchor down against those types of guys. And we saw it against Jonathan Allen on that one play. I think it was like a second and long run or a second and medium run, because the first down play was pretty solid. Nick Gates got stacked up and pushed right back into Saquon Barkley. And I'm not sitting here just crapping on Gates. I think Gates is probably he is the best interior offensive lineman the New York Giants have right now. But going up against those types of strong individuals is going to give him a problem.
Right.
And if it's going to give Nick Gates a problem, you damn sure it's going to give Mark Lewinsky a problem. John Feliciano a problem. Right. Josh Azudu, if you put him in there, a problem. And that's an issue with this entire offense right now, is just how ineffective the interior offensive line has been. It's better than it was last year. It's not playoff level.
No, it's not. It's not even close. And it's getting to the point where I'm like debating if it even is that much better than it was last year. Last year was so horrific that the answer is probably still yes. But I don't know, man. Games like, I mean, like, they're just not even trying to operate a drop back pass game. And I just think that has to mostly do with the offensive line. It can't be just like, oh, they don't trust Daniel Jones to do anything, because he obviously has the capability, has the arm talent, his adequate arm. He's got okay processing, whatever. Like, he can make these throws. If he can operate a drop back pass game, he's done it before in his career. And so you think, like, how do you fix this? And that becomes the question. Do you move, if Azudu's healthy, do you move him back to left guard? Then what do you do with Gates, who's playing left guard? What do you do with Feliciano, who's kind of like the heart of the center and heart of the team?
Gates is that movable piece, it seems like. Throughout his entire career, the guy was a tackle. He moves inside to center. He plays guard. He played guard, I think, before he played center. So I would imagine that that movable piece would be Nick Gates, which is a lot to ask Nick Gates, but that dude is one resilient SOB, and we all know that. So that might be the move, because I don't think you really want to be moving Josh Azudu around too much. He already started off at tackle and training camp and everything like that. So I think that would be the move if the Giants do opt to bench Mark Lewinsky at this point, which at this right now, man, I'm kind of leaning towards you need to spice it up, but I also want them to do what I just want them to get their best five out there.
Right.
And I think you really need to start looking at who your best five is, not just as a run blocker, but also in pass protection.
Right.
And I'm starting to feel hard pressed to say that it's Mark Lewinsky.
Yeah, I am starting to, I would understand that and take entirely. And to me, it feels like if they could get it going, it would be Gates at center, Bredesen at right guard, Azudu at left guard, if they felt like they could get that going without, you know, screwing up. Part of this is continuity. They want Feliciano out there because he was there earlier in the year when things were actually going well for this offense, right? Yeah. And they think back and they're like, we can't take this guy out. He was there when we were actually moving the ball on offense. We were creating holes in the run game. I mean, this offense, we had some big draw plays with Saquon Barkley today, but besides those draw plays, there wasn't really much in the run game again either. Like, the run game has just been so bad lately as far as creating space up front for Saquon Barkley. He finishes with 18 for 63 and a 3.5 average. That includes the 21-yard draw play and then another draw play that he had. So really, if you take away those two big draw plays by Barkley, they didn't do much at all in the traditional run game sense. And those draw plays were like, okay, Washington's playing a specific kind of defense where this is a good call. And it were good calls by Kafka. I credit him for that. But I do want to talk about Feliciano as well, because, you know, everything that we can mention, if he doesn't make that stupid, unnecessary taunting penalty, the Giants probably win this game, because they're at the 35 then. They're 5 yards away from Gano being in basically automatic range for Gano. And we know this, the way they coach this team. They're going to grind those five. They're not going to play for the first down or the touchdown. They're going to play for the 5 yards. And ultimately, it would have been the right decision, because Washington wouldn't have had enough time really to come back.
No, it would have been a 10-point deficit. And I think it was like, what, 6 minutes and some
minutes.
Change?
And they would have grinded off more time.
That was a devastating. I don't even know what Feliciano was doing. Like, he was flexing and walking through a bunch of Washington defenders.
Yeah.
Like, I think I saw people on Twitter being like,
he did flex was it Slayton?
I think so. But you're doing it right in the middle
too close to the Washington.
Yeah, that was just there's just no reason to do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like a hold.
Who are you even flexing? Like, what's
I don't even
the
know.
Point?
Like, it's not even like a holding penalty or a penalty that is during the play. Yeah. So it's like, well, I could see what you're thinking. There, you don't want them to make up. No, like, there's absolutely no reason to do that. There's nothing good that's going to come of that other than you stroking your own ego. And that is a very selfish play by John Feliciano. And I'm sure he'd be the first person to say that. I'm sure Brian Daboll told him that. And ultimately, it cost the Giants. I mean, I don't want to say definitely cost the Giants the win in this one, but Giants go up 10 points, 6 minutes. Taylor Heineke's your quarterback. I think the Giants can put that away unless certain things like really go against the Giants, which it's happened. Washington has had some lucky breaks that this season like that. So have the Giants. So maybe, but still, man, don't even put yourself into that position. And the fact that he did really actually pisses me off.
Yeah, it's really frustrating for sure. And, you know, even to get to this game tied, even with that penalty, they needed a wild 4th-and-4 play, Washington, where the Giants really schemed that up right and they had a good call. And there was nothing open. And Heineke just did a really good job, like getting away from Ojulari, who spun into him, and then just creating something while throwing to his left. That was a really sick throw by Heineke. If we're going to be honest, it was probably the best overall throw in this entire game by any quarterback, when you just consider how the difficulty level of making that throw on the roll to your left, off completely off balance by being chased. We're watching it right now. You guys can't see it, but this was a, you know, crazy, wild play that he's not going to make often. So I don't think he would have scored that and then gotten the ball back and then, you know, force the, and then, you know, let him back in the field goal range. But you don't know. Obviously, it's hard to tell.
Another thing that pissed me off, too, since we're just talking about things that grinded our gears here on the Big Blue Banter podcast, was the 3rd and 2 in overtime. Mm-hmm. What was that miscommunication?
Yeah.
You align Richie James in the backfield. You're in split back shotgun. To me, I would imagine, just knowing what the New York Giants have called plays recently, that was going to be a play action zone read, if you want to call it that, but it was going to be more of a play action roll Daniel Jones to his left and have Richie James slide underneath him. Easy completion. Hopefully that end man on the line of scrimmage bites down on the play action to Saquon Barkley.
Or you run with Jones.
Or you run with Jones. And you also probably had another route from the backside. I'm not sure. I'm going to try to pull it up right now. You probably had other routes coming over the middle of the field, or just clearing out, doing something to occupy defenders. And it just did not work out whatsoever because Richie James and Saquon Barkley just run right into each other. And Washington's defense is just on Daniel Jones at this point.
Yeah. I mean, when they run into each other, the end man in the line of scrimmage has no reason but to go for them. He's going for Daniel Jones. Otherwise, if they don't run into each other, maybe he has to take Richie James on that slide underneath. Like, he has to at least account for him. And so, and if he doesn't, he just throws it to him. It's an easy completion.
You put him in a conflict.
First down. Yeah. You put the defender in conflict, as they've done all year, to convert these third and shorts. And who knows, maybe that could have also won them this game. There's a lot of frustrating little moments like that for this Giants offense. Cause I felt like, man, I know people are somehow blaming the defense because they had some missed tackles with, like, we're asking guys like, you know, Fabian Moreau and Nick McCloud and these guys to make these key tackles. Like, come on. Like, you look at Micah McFadden out there. It's, at times to me, it looks like he's running in quicksand. He's so I hate to say it, like, his lateral, like, I liked his tape at Indiana against the Big Ten. I always get fooled by Big Ten players though, because the level of the speed on the Big Ten level is so much different than the NFL level. And McFadden to me does not look great out there right now at all. Neither does Jalen Smith. Our second level players are just not answering the call. And I know Tate Crowder after the game said, free me. He wants to play, but Tate Crowder was struggling too. That's why he's on the bench. None of those three were making these plays. It's not like you put him in, take out McFadden, and I'll be singing a different tune, because the tape showed it week after week. And we're really getting hit hard, in my opinion, by these linebackers week after week. And so, yeah, you can blame that. You can blame the missed tackles. There were some really bad missed tackles. But come on, dude, they're on the field the entire game.
Yeah.
And the pass rush was dominant the entire game. And that's what I want to talk about next. This Giants pass rush to me looked better this game than it has all season long. And I was thinking about it, man. It might be the best it's looked since 2016 in a single game. And now, obviously, that they have to sustain it. But there's a big reason for why it looked so much better. And that's Azeez Ojulari back. You still saw this big splash play from Dexter Lawrence on the pass rush game. Leonard got hurt. That sucked. Kayvon had a couple good pass rushes that I remember. But Azeez Ojulari really added so much to this game. You can talk about the strip sack now. What did you see on that one?
To help kill, probably brutally, plastic pollution. I've tried Liquid Death, and it is thirst quenching. When I'm parched, it hydrates me. So give it a try, and if you would like to do that, go get Liquid Death at your local Whole Foods Market, Target, and Stop and Shop stores, or find a Liquid Death retailer near you with their store locator tool at liquiddeath.com/bigblue. That's liquiddeath.com/bigblue. Ready to win money and boost your odds? WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Tennessee, and Virginia. We're bringing the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play. Exclusive rewards are right at your fingertips with Wynn Rewards on WynnBET. Get in on all your favorite teams, players, and sports from the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, golf, MMA, WNBA, college football, and more. Great promos, odds, and payouts are happening right now at WynnBET. From boosted same-game parlays to live in-game odds on every major sports, WynnBET has what you need to win. Ready to play? Sign up today to receive a special offer. Bet $100, win $100. Download Bet Win. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning. Be on the lookout for the WynnBET Win Hour each Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. During WynnBET Win Hour, marquee games of the week will have better odds on WynnBET, giving you a larger payout opportunity. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where play through WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, please call 1-800-522-4700.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, Dan, if you're watching on YouTube, everybody, you could see how low to the ground Azeez Ojulari gets against John Bates on this play. And yes, it's a tight end. I get it. But this is a strip sack. And watch just the bend and flexibility of Azeez Ojulari here. You don't have to do too much to defeat John Bates, but once you're in this position, if you're watching on YouTube, you're at the top of the arc, you're basically hip to hip, but you're starting to turn the corner. Look at how low Azeez Ojulari's knees are to the ground. He plants that right foot flat. That right foot right here is flat on the ground, and his left knee is about 3 inches away from grazing the freaking turf at MetLife Stadium as he bends through a hold from John Bates and then finds Taylor Heinicke to strip that sack.
That's sick.
I don't remember Azeez Ojulari having this type of bend in college. I knew he was a bendy guy, and he had his move that he was really, really sound with, the move where he clubs the outside arm and then he tries to dip and then rip. I love it. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau employed it last week.
Right.
It's a good move. But This guy and this play, and then there was another play that I put up on Twitter earlier, I think from the Bears game, where Azeez Ojulari's knees are like an inch or two away from the turf. Like, he is a bendy dude, and he is very explosive. He was looking like he was shot out of a cannon, and I'm very, very excited about this defensive front now. Like, if there's any silver lining here, because we're very negative right now. Like I said, I'm treating this more as a loss because I just feel like the Giants blew it, right?
They should have won this game.
They should have won this football game, no doubt about it. But if you want to look at some silver linings, one of the big ones is Dexter Lawrence. Hopefully, like, Leonard Williams is all healthy and good. I know he missed part of that game. Azeez Ojulari, Kayvon Thibodeau with situational rushers like O'Shane Zimenez in a scheme with Wink Martindale. I think they can really start to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks down the stretch of the season. And we saw it here against Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. That could be the strength. That could be the thing that gives them brings them back into the mix. I mean, they have a must-win game coming up against the Commanders in 2 weeks. If they, you know, maybe they can beat the Eagles, that would change the outlook on that. But a big factor would be if this pass rush can stay alive. It came alive in this game. It was there on almost every of these key down situations. Like, even the 4th and 4 where Heinicke made that sick play, like, that was a good pass rush. That was a good play by the from a pressure standpoint. It's just the coverage, you can call it a breakdown, really it's just a quarterback creating off script. And, like, it's tough to contain a receiver for that long. And so it is what it is. But outside of that, man, they didn't get much at all going in the pass game in the second half, Washington. Really anything. They had a couple little screens, a couple little quick hitters, not some little intermediate shots, but nothing really. And so I'm very excited about that as well. I was excited about the way Isaiah Hodgins played. We talked about that a little bit earlier. I'm happy Bellinger got back. He had 5 receptions, only 24 yards, but he got back in the mix. Like I said, he didn't really need to be spelled. One thing I want to ask you about, though, before we talk, turn to the coaching, because I think the coaching is an important thing to talk about at length, is, you know, I keep seeing this. People keep asking us this or asking me this on Twitter, and it's like, what is the reason? Why do you think that they can't figure out ways to get Saquon Barkley a little bit more involved as a receiver and just a little bit more involved as like a design route, like, you know, plays that are designed for him as a route runner?
I mean, the simple answer is the same answer we've been saying for weeks, and that's because they're using him in pass protection a lot of times, especially on third down when the opposing team is showing blitz. Mm-hmm. That's one reason. But in this game, he did have 5 targets. He did catch all 5. He just didn't really do a lot with all 5. He only had 18 yards. They like using him as the fast 3 and the fast 4. They clear out that side of the field. They see how the defense reacts. If everybody clears out with the wide receivers who are running intermediate routes, crossing routes, and deep routes, then they just take the little check down to Saquon Barkley. I think that happened twice in this game, but Barkley only picked up like 3 yards on each of those plays. I personally would love to see him over the middle of the field, operate over the middle of the field, the angle routes and things like that. But I just think it's easier said than done in those obvious passing situations to get that done, because you do need him, his presence in pass protection, right, to help, especially the inside. Because there are a lot of times throughout the last couple of weeks, and I'm not sure about this, we'll see on the All-22, where Saquon Barkley would just align basically in the A-gap, like a yard off the line of scrimmage, just to kind of take that linebacker who looks like he could be coming.
Right. And I think that's something that, you know, has haunted them all year. They've needed his help in pass pro. What about something that I keep seeing Giants fan in Charlotte bringing up on Twitter, and he wants answers for that? I want him too, and I'm just curious to get your take on them. Why aren't the Giants doing, considering using more 21 personnel to get Breida and Barkley on the field at the same time, just to get more speed on the field? Breida has more speed than a Richie James. Breida has more speed than a Hodgins. Breida has more speed than basically, I mean, and those were the only really played three receivers today.
Yeah.
But he has more speed than these extra tight ends too, if you want speed on the field.
I think I would like to see that. I think the reason why he's probably not going out there as often is because the Giants passing attack is predicated on play action. Right. And not a lot of teams are going to fall for play action and think you're going to run the football in 21 personnel. Yeah, you align 12, you align 13 personnel, then you could really sell the play action. And those guys are up on the line of scrimmage. You can get Daniel Jones rolling off the boot with those guys all aligned on one side of the line of scrimmage, coming across the middle of the field towards Daniel Jones with the defense moving in the opposite direction. It's something that this offense had so much success with against Chicago, against Green Bay during that chunk of the season, against Jacksonville. But right now, not as much, because teams are tracking on it. Teams are on top of it, and teams are not allowing Daniel Jones to actually roll out. That's a big reason. You know,
I think
Jones
a take.
Has a guy right in his face, like, all the time.
I think that's a great take, especially because they've used these tight ends so much as blockers, and they've used these tight ends so much in the passing game as chip and release. And more importantly, like you said, you have to try to sell. You're still a run first team. You have to try to sell the run to set up the pass. They feel like, at least. Now, that is something, you know, but at the flip side of that is, well, this isn't really working anymore. Like you said, since Seattle, teams have figured this out. Why not try something new? Why not try to get 21 and more speed on the field with the 21 personnel look? The Giants did an okay job running the ball today. Overall, they'd averaged 4.5 yards per carry. Now, a lot of those were spark plays by Jones. Obviously, Barkley didn't have the good average, but at the same time, they're not going away from the run. You can see that this is a team that doesn't have any interest in that. So getting away from the 12 and 13 personnel might impact that.
Look, a lot of things change throughout an NFL season, and the Giants know that better than anybody. But I do think there's something to take away from the fact that Darius Slayton wasn't going to make this team, and he was buried on the depth chart, and now he is by far and away their most talented receiving weapon. Like, there's some, you have to read into that and say that is one reason why this team is not aggressively trying to push the ball down the field. One of many reasons, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, but be careful giving too much praise to Darius Slayton, because he's the whipping boy somehow on Twitter, because he has one drop in the game. I know it's a costly drop, but it's one drop. He also had 6 catches for 90 yards. He also created incredible separation on the 55-yard route, making an adjustment to make that catch.
Slayton's the furthest thing from the problem here.
Of course.
And I've been I've chastised Slayton throughout the last 2 years of his career, because he is inefficient. He does drop the football. And that's obviously a problem when you're a wide receiver. But in terms of creating explosive plays through the passing attack right now,
there is nothing
other than Darius Slayton. He's doing it like once or twice every single game.
Yeah. And not only that, he's doing once or twice every single game. He's also forcing corners to play further off him, which we're seeing now in consecutive weeks. He's forcing the defenses to, because what we're going to say before, look, like, oh, well, why don't we go back to, you know, 11 personnel or 21 personnel and get Breida and get speed on the field so we can, you know, shouldn't it be easier to run against lighter boxes that hasn't been, or I'm sorry, in lighter personnel packages? Like, you know, some people say it's actually easier to run at 11 personnel and 12, 13. That's not the case for the Giants. You want to know why? Because defenses don't care what kind of personnel we have. They're stacking the box regardless. They do not respect our pass game at all. They don't respect the intermediate levels of our pass game. They don't respect the deep levels of our pass game, with the exception of corners who play a little off Darius Slayton, like you mentioned. But going into these lighter personnel packages isn't actually going to help the run game, because defenses are still committing so many resources to the run game, no matter who's on the field.
Unless you started moving the football through the air,
right,
which is not something the Giants do.
Or have done, yes. And something maybe they can do, but so far it looks like they haven't. But you take Darius Slayton off the field, that's it. The corners are pressing up. There's no separation anywhere in the intermediate or deep levels. And that's just going to be it. So he's the furthest thing from the problem in my mind, too. Yeah, he should have caught that ball. I get it. He made a bad adjustment to the ball. He high pointed it and he didn't catch it. He should have kept it in his hands instead of trying to bring it in his body. But that's been his MO the whole time. We knew he's not the best, you know, adjuster to the ball in the air. We knew he's not the best hands catcher. But, you know, if you're going to blame him for the game for one play, I don't know if I can agree with that. And it is what it is. It was a big play. But ultimately, obviously the Giants are going to need better from everyone in their passing game, including Slayton on that drop, obviously, and just, you know, the whole thing. And they're just going to have to figure out a way to do it. But I don't know ultimately if we're going to get to see, just to shout you out, Giants fan in Charlotte, like I don't know if we're going to see the 21 personnel, because I think Nick brings up a big point. It's not going to help them run the football. It's not going to help them get better running the football. It's not going to help them get better with the kind of their diversity of the play, of the play action versus the actual running of the football.
I would like for them to try something. Now they have in a lot of these fourth and one situations, right, third and one situations, and it's worked. But maybe at least try something. Have some sort of package with those guys out there with some more misdirection. We saw a lot of that early in the year, right? There was Wildcat Saquon Barkley. We're like, oh, my God, they're doing all this stuff.
I bring back
He's the Wildcat. Matt Breed is next to him. Wando Robinson's doing – like, they were doing all that. Yeah, I would absolutely bring that back.
For a little bit, right? But, a couple of series.
The offense has been stagnant since before the bye week. Since Seattle, the offense has been pretty stagnant. And even against – Jacksonville, I wouldn't say it was stagnant, but remember what the Giants did to ice that game. The same running play consecutive times with one little adjustment off the quarterback keeper, off the basically like a rollout type of
situation. We saw a little bit of that today, right? He ran the draw twice and he came back three times. It again. He loves that's what I'm saying. And then it got stopped the third time. But he's like, Matt Kafka loves, like, if you don't stop a play and we run it again, you don't stop it, he's going to run it that third time. He's going to make you adjust to stop that play,
which I do like.
I kind of like it too.
Yeah, but at the same time, there are times where you can maybe vary it up and be like, oh, they're really going to overplay it now. So
on
maybe
the third the third one.
Hey, it's worked in the past, and it worked a lot on those halfback draws. I know that's not sexy to run a halfback draw, but if those
some of the biggest plays of the game.
But if those linebackers and those second level defenders keep dropping into deep zones to eliminate those horizontal crossers and sitting on those quick stick routes, why not do the halfback draw? Just catch them sleeping and then make them respect your running attack.
Yep, completely agree with you there. All right, Nick, what do you think about Daniel Jones in this game?
Jones, I thought he was fine, but the offense is playing this more, I don't know if conservative is the right word, but maybe conservative because they don't trust the offense as a whole. So what they're asking Daniel Jones to do, as they've asked him to do this entire season, Daniel Jones is executing that fine. Like, he's being fine. Now, I thought the Darius Slayton ball, the one that Darius Slayton caught, that was a solid 50-50 ball. Darius Slayton went up. He made a play. Maybe, I wouldn't say a push down of the corner. A little subtle a little push off. You know, I'm okay.
Receivers are always allowed to do that.
Yeah, which I hate, to be honest. Yeah, you know, I'm pro defense in terms of that stuff. But Daniel Jones finished his game 25 of 31 for 200 yards with that one touchdown. I don't know what happened on the one Darius Slayton ball. Like I said, I'm going to reserve my judgment. Was that poorly placed? We'll wait and we'll see for that when once we receive the all 22. But if I had to assign anything to Daniel Jones, it's fine, but it's not spectacular. Like, because they're not really asking him to do many spectacular things because of either Jones or because of the offensive line or because of the lack of weapons or because of all those things collectively.
Yeah, it's a tough game to evaluate the quarterback from, I think, because you can just see it. 25 of 31 for 200 yards, that's a small – it's a 6.5 average, but that's also bolstered by a 55-yard catch. Yes. You take that away, and we're really just throwing dink and dunk the entire game. It's kind of the story. Like, they really didn't attempt almost any passes in the 10-plus-yard range. They had the Hodgins touchdown on a great whip route by Hodgins. Great – I mean, he created so much separation on that. Great play, fine throw, got there. And then, you know, they had the Slayton two bombs, the three Slayton bomb attempts – but they're really just kind of going bombs or rollout slides, and that's it. There's nothing in the intermediate range. So he executed what they asked him to. The fumble was big, though. He lost the fumble that led to 3 points for Washington. That was a tough one because they were driving the ball, too. He's got to protect the ball. We know that. He hasn't had too many fumbles this year that they've lost. This was one of the few ones they've lost. So obviously that was a tough one. But, yeah, I think you're right. He just, you know, executed the game plan fine, made a couple fine throws, and they didn't really ask him to do much. And that's the weird part to me, because it's like in overtime when they needed it, he started to open it up a little with Hodgins in that slant game. And then is that not open at any other point in the game? Like, can you not run those plays at any – it's just hard for me to imagine that, like, the only thing they can do at any point is that PA slide game or run. And then it's like, oh, we get to OT and he's throwing slants and they look pretty easy. They're wide open over the middle. So what's going on there, these little inbreakers? And it just – it's so weird to me. It feels like I almost get the feeling like – that the coaching is doing this because they want it. This is their game plan. We want to run this PA slot over and over. We want to run this conservative offense. We don't want to take the chances opening up.
Yeah, but they don't want to.
They feel they have to. Yes. This is a coaching staff. This is the thing people get wrong a lot on Twitter. It's like Dable and Kafka do not want to be running this offense. Obviously, this is not in their bet. They know it's not. Dable was one of the most aggressive play callers ever in Buffalo. He once opened a game with, like, what, 30 straight pass attempts?
Yeah.
Like, this is not what they want to be doing. This is what they feel they have to be doing. But that doesn't make it right. Just because they feel they have to be doing it doesn't mean they're right in that they have to be doing it. And that's kind of the question we're going to try to get to on the film and try to figure out moving forward. Because as you see it open up like that in overtime with those slants being open, consistent throw, throw, first down, it's like, well, maybe you think about, like, you know, you thought this is what you had to do, but maybe there's new evidence to suggest maybe you don't have to do this, right? Maybe you can throw the ball a little bit more.
What happened to the RPO game?
RPO game's non-existent now. I don't know why.
But there were a couple times where it was called, like where James was sliding underneath and Jones could either opt to run it himself, going into the mesh point, which I don't think he was going to actually hand the football off to Saquon Barkley. But there were a lot of plays earlier in the season where it was an RPO and it was just like they're playing off leverage. Richie James, you run an out route. Daniel Jones, you read the defender. Right. If the defender stays in the box, you throw it. If not, you hand the football off to Saquon Barkley. And we haven't seen as much of that. I still think it's there in every single game a little bit, but I was surprised in this game from, I didn't watch the All-22 yet, from the broadcast angle, I don't think I saw it as much.
You know, we didn't. And another thing is they were working off the RPO earlier this year. They were working the RPO into the RPO play action and into the back shoulder. They were throwing some back shoulders off nice, of it. Yeah. The one to Slayton that hit, that they hit the face, they got in his face mask on, he can make catch. Why not throw some of those? Like, just mix them in occasionally, right? Like, let's just get a little bit more going with the passing game, at least attempts to feel like we can at least get to the bottom of why this is happening. And look, it could lead to interception. It could lead to the play I talked about earlier where Glinski gets beat immediately. They're sacked. Your drive's ruined. You're like, why did I try that? It was awful, and it ruined our drive. But at least you got it. It's better than, like, running the ball right into the line of scrimmage.
The reason why I asked about the RPO, too, was because what if they're not running the RPO as much because the offensive line keeps getting those stupid penalties.
Yeah, when they're a little 2 yards down the field. Yeah, man, we get those a lot.
Yeah, because the Giants ran a lot of RPOs.
Get those penalties a lot.
I contend that Isaiah Hodgins touchdown callback was a BS one. That was a BS one. But the other ones, they weren't. The other ones, they're just running downfield. You got to, because sometimes with Jones, he held onto the football a little bit too long and he didn't get rid of the football. And that led to the offensive lineman climbing up this because they don't know. They don't know if it's a run or a pass at that time. So that's why it's so bang, bang. You need to be very decisive.
Ball has to be out.
Playing that RPO. And there's always that apex defender, or that outside linebacker, whatever you want to classify him as, kind of teetering the line. Like, he knows that he's the read defender. So what is he doing? He's kind of cheating outside. So he's really making Daniel Jones think, do I hand the football off here or do I throw it? Okay, I'm throwing it. Oh, crap, it's actually not there. Now what do I do?
Right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of there's a huge mental aspect to that. And you really need to be quick and decisive with your decision-making whenever you're running RPOs or you're going to take those stupid penalties.
Yeah, you're right. And so we'll see if they can mix that back in. I want to finish this off talking about the coaching. I think earlier this year we discussed at length that we felt this coaching staff was giving them a clear edge on a week-to-week basis. At times, this coaching staff even played a massive role in winning games. The Titans game, Dable going for 2 points there, that won them the game. And there were other examples of them winning the game based on coaching. I don't think that was the issue. I don't think that was the situation today. I don't think the Giants coaching staff played a role in helping them win this game. And I think a case could even be made by some that they played a role in them losing this game. There were some questionable time management decisions by Brian Daboll. That's been an issue, I think, for him at times throughout the season. And it feels like in general with this team now, I've at least felt this way, Nick, that when they get a lead, they really do like to sit on the ball. They really don't like to put the pedal to the metal. They don't want it. It's not that they don't want to. Maybe they don't feel they can.
But they sit on the ball when they're trailing.
They sit on the ball when they're trailing. It's just you're right. It's an all-around sit on the ball type of experience here. But that's not what we were expecting. That was more along the Joe Judge lines, right? And so that's the question becomes like, because I think we have to look at it like on film to really know like who won the battle, Kafka versus Del Rio, who won the battle, Wink versus Turner. That I don't know. And I think Wink had some great calls that I can think of on top of my head. Kafka, on the other hand, that might not be as true. It's hard to say, but maybe again, he's just limited. But I think a case can be made that this wasn't Brian Daboll's best effort. To me, just like feel wise, I felt like this was the game I thought was his worst of the season.
Yeah, without watching the All-22, I think I agree with you, but I'm really going to wait to give a sound answer on that. Because just even looking through this second half, there was always like some stupid mistake or a negative 1 yard run game. Like even like 1st and 10, Saquon Barkley stopped for -1 yards. 2nd and 11, Daniel Jones finds Nick Vinette for a couple yards. Offensive holding penalty. Now you're in a 2nd and 20 and then a 3rd and 16 and you're punting on a 4th and 15. And then you obviously have that 1st and 10, 6:22 left in the fourth quarter. We already brought this up, but Daniel Jones what do? They attack off leverage, something that Mike Kafka does. Darius Slayton, they're giving him respect. So he hits Darius Slayton for a curl that he takes for 12 yards. John Feliciano takes that penalty. And then three plays later, the Giants are punching the football. But like, there were times where Mike Kafka was dialing up the passes. I don't know if it was always at the optimal time, because on the very next drive after the touchdown drive, what happened? The Giants come out and they just throw the football three times deep. All three of them go incomplete. Right. And it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, there were times where Mike Kafka dialed up a 2nd and 7 pass. And what happened? Daniel Jones gets sacked because Mark Lewinsky's his guard, as we brought up earlier in the podcast. So it's frustrating. I can't wait to get in the film to see exactly, like you said, the X's and O's, what exactly was going on, but it was not effective. The offense, that second half was the worst half, the offense that we've seen this season. And that's saying a lot, because there's been some ugly halves this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair way to say it. You went over to the top of the pod, 3 3-and-outs, a 4-and-out. This is as bad as it gets for an offensive performance. And obviously one of those was based on the Feliciano stupid taunting, which is obnoxious, but it is what it is. Now moving forward, we look at it, and it's a playoff race that gets a little more interesting with the news of Jimmy Garoppolo out for the season. At this stage, the 49ers basically have to go to Brock Purdy, a 7th-round rookie, another Big Ten guy who is very limited in my mind as a quarterback.
He's Iowa State.
Yeah. Oh, no, he was Iowa State. Purdy was Iowa State.
We have a friend that would eviscerate you for that take.
I don't know why I'm thinking Purdy was he originally Purdue? I feel like he transferred from Purdue. He was Iowa State at the end. That was a bad take by me. That was a miss.
I don't think he did, but I'll look it up.
Brock Purdy was originally Purdue. You can look it up as we go, but he is not, in my mind, the option at all for the 49ers. He's not going to be a good option. He's going to struggle a lot. Maybe he wasn't Purdue. Maybe I'm just thinking Purdy and Purdue, which is a very stupid thing to think. But, yeah, no, I think he was all Iowa State.
Yeah, I mean, I remember them talking about him when he was really young. It was either his freshman or sophomore year.
But he's a smaller quarterback, doesn't have much arm talent, isn't going to be a good option for them. So they, like, it gets interesting because they could follow the race and the Seahawks could win that division back. And now the Giants are competing with the 49ers and the Redskins or Commanders for that final spot. But I think ultimately, as you look through it, no matter how you shake it out, the Commanders game in 2 weeks basically becomes a must-win game or potentially just a must-not-lose game. Like, you might be able to tie that again and figure this thing out. But at the very least, it's a must not lose game, no matter how you slice it. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
And then when you look at the Commanders' schedule, since the Giants are going to be in direct competition with this team,
right. They
actually have the 49ers on their schedule. It sucks because Jimmy Garoppolo is not going to be there. That's the game after the Giants game. So they travel to San Francisco. Then they host the Browns and host Dallas. Now, that Dallas game, I don't know how important it's going to be. If the Eagles are going to have it locked up, if Dallas has that number one seed locked up in terms of wild card, we'll have to see what goes down there. In terms of the Browns, it'll be, their 4th game with Deshaun Watson. Maybe they're going to try to get it in rhythm. You know, they suck right now, but maybe they'll try to, finish strong down the stretch of the season. We'll have to wait and see. But either way, that loss of Jimmy Garoppolo and the fact that Washington actually is going to play them might work against the Giants. Depending on how the NFC West race fares.
It could, and the Seahawks also get to play the 49ers, so that hurts the Giants too in that regard. Looking at it, I mean, David Syverson from Our Lads, our former podcast guest who we love, pointed out to me, the quarterbacks the Seahawks play the rest of the way are really bad outside of pass. They have one matchup with Mahomes, and it's just bad. So it's going to be tough, he thinks, for the Giants to overtake the Seahawks. He's kind of locking them in. So it then goes between the Giants and the Commanders, or the 49ers if they totally absolutely collapse. But they beat a pretty good Dolphins team today, despite losing Jimmy early just with that dominant defense.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the Giants still control a lot of this. If they can beat Washington, they'll have that tiebreaker, since both of these teams are gross and now have a tie. I hate having a tie on the record because it just screws the entire thing up. So from now on, I have to look at the New York Giants and say what? They are X and 1, 7-4-1.
Now we can't get it. Neither of our predictions could be right from the preseason. Not that we want those to be right anyway, because then they won't win enough games. But now they have the tie. We're gonna have that moving forward. We'll see how this all shakes out. Keep it locked and loaded here. I'm excited to see the film on this one. I just want to see what was going on with the offense and how the defense played and what the Giants could have done. But other than that, have a great rest of your week. Signing off from Arizona. I'll be back in Jersey tomorrow. So probably all 22 is going to come out later this week because it's not really going to be feasibly possible to do it on Monday, but Tuesday you can expect it then. And then we'll get back to it with the defense and we'll get prepared for this Eagles game, because an Eagles win would change everything. It would change the whole outlook and feeling for this team right now. And it's not impossible, I don't think.